We have some numbers on the bridge that collapsed in Baltimore, cutting off a major highway and likely to disrupt shipping at a major port in America. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. The governor of Maryland has declared a state of emergency after a major highway bridge in Baltimore collapsed overnight into the main shipping route in and out of the port of Baltimore. The Francis Scott Key Bridge, carrying a section of the Baltimore Beltway, has been destroyed. Authorities are searching the water for possible victims. The port of Baltimore is the top port of entry for imported cars in America, and it's not clear if the channel is passable to cargo ships. The port is a major economic engine in the region, generating $400 million in tax revenue to local, county, and state government. The bridge, part of Interstate 695, carried on average 1,400 vehicles each hour, 12 million a year. Shares of former president and presumptive Republican nominee Donald Trump's social media company start trading on the NASDAQ a bit later this morning under the ticker symbol DJT. Initial public offerings can often bounce on their inaugural day, which would boost Trump's wealth on paper. He can't sell the stocks right away. Marketplace's Henry Epp has more.
The listing is the result of a merger with a shell company whose shares have bounced around a lot for the last few years, but started soaring as the merger with Trump Media became official. That rising price, though, is based mostly on the former president's celebrity and reputation rather than on any solid business fundamentals. Trump Media reportedly took in just over $3 million in revenue through the first 9 months of last year and lost $49 million in that time. But interest in the stock from retail investors has boosted the company's value into the billions, which also boosts Trump's wealth because he owns around 60% of the company's stock. However, his shares are likely to be locked up for months, meaning unless the company's board changes its rules, he can't immediately sell them to pay off his mounting legal bills, and their value could change depending on the whims of the market. I'm Henry Epp for Marketplace.
Now to whose voices are included in official surveys of the U.S. economy. Many government reports exclude data on American Indian and Alaska Native people, even though the data exists. This includes a Federal Reserve annual report, the Survey of Household Economics and Decision Making, acronym SHED. But a new analysis from the Minneapolis Fed's Center for Indian Country Development is looking to fill the gap. Here's Marketplace's Savannah Marr.
The Fed says random sampling in the SHED survey doesn't capture enough Native respondents to compare to other groups. So the Center for Indian Country Development pooled 9 years of unpublished SHED data and found
Native-identifying households are less likely to report doing at least okay financially.
Data director Vanessa Palmer says they're a third less likely than other households to say they have the cash to cover a $400 emergency bill. But that unburied data has limitations, says Robert Maxim with the Brookings Institution.
Over 60% of American Indians, Alaska Native, are multiracial.
That means that in many federal surveys, Maxim says Native respondents are getting lost in the two or more races category. So when it comes to Native consumers and tribal economies,
you don't have the full picture of what that looks like.
Maxim says the government could get more clarity by oversampling Native people and empowering tribal nations to gather their own economic data. I'm Savannah Marr for Marketplace.
Is it possible that the surge in eating out, despite inflation, is coming to an end? Darden Restaurants, that's Olive Garden, Longhorn, Ruth's Chris, Capital Grill, has posted its first decline in sales since the pandemic eased. Here's Marketplace's Kristen Schwab.
The first thing consumers usually do when they're trying to spend less money on eating out is pull back on indulgences. Steven Zagor is a business professor at Columbia.
I still want to go out, but maybe when I get to this restaurant, I'm not going to order that appetizer, or I might not get desserts.
Have a sit-down dining experience for less. The next shift people tend to make is when they eat. They prioritize happy hour, lunch, or brunch. And finally, when things start to feel too tight to justify tipping, they trade down to fast food. Zagor says that puts sit-down restaurants like the Olive Garden in a tough spot.
Yeah, they're kind of caught in the squeeze.
They aren't the kind of places that usually lure in higher income customers who are more padded to deal with inflation. Meanwhile, Kevin Schimpf at Technomic, a restaurant research firm, says casual chains aren't the most affordable option for lower income households.
I actually think that there's a pretty big overlap between the standard, you know, quick service consumer and the standard Olive Garden consumer.
Schimpf says for many people, the Olive Garden has become less of a habit and more of a treat. And it's not necessarily the kind of treat consumers are looking for right now. If they're going to go out, they might go big.
You know, they can go down and they can get a steak or something that makes it feel like they're getting a lot for their money.
Big picture, Schimpf thinks this dip in dining is a temporary blip. Sean Dunlop, a senior equity analyst at Morningstar, says that's important for these sit-down restaurants to keep in mind. Many competitors are hawking Dollaritas, endless shrimp, and prices that nearly match fast food.
The reaction from a lot of brands has been, hey, let's increase sales at basically any cost.
He says those brands will have trouble getting rid of those deals down the line. But for pasta, people will probably pay full price. I'm Kristen Schwab for Marketplace.
Our producers are Elizabeth Hodson, Naomi Rainey, Nick Perez, Ariana Rosas, Alex Schroeder, and Erica Soderstrom. Our senior producer is Meredith Gerritsen-Morby. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio. It's the Marketplace Morning Report. APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.